Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Dom Giordano on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Welcome back to Philadelphia, Jason Brigley. Jason, welcome back. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, this question is out there, doesn't get often asked enough. What's your theory why this has not helped or mitigated or moved the ball forward a whole lot?
Well, I don't think there should have been any expectation that it would. If you look at the history of other groups in America that have risen from poverty to prosperity, whether you're talking about the Germans or the Italians or the Jews, typically they did not seek political power first, and they did not rise as a result of having attained it. They focused on economic development first, skills, habits, behaviors, human capital is what economists call it. The politics came later. The pursuit of political office came later. The one group that did not take that route significantly are the Irish. They sought politics first in much the same way that Blacks did.
That's what I was just going to say. Yeah, that's what I was going to say to you, Jason. But aren't they successful by doing that?
Well, they were successful politically. You know, by the late 1800s, early 1900s, you had these Irish political machines running Philadelphia, Boston, New York. But the Irish middle class was not rising. The average Irish person was not doing well at this period. And it wasn't really until the decline of those political machines where we saw the rise of the Irish middle class that we have today. So politics is one way to go. It's just not the most efficient way to move a group from poverty to prosperity.
All right, let's talk about why then. Why would that be the case? Is somebody continuing a meme, a narrative with people for their own agenda? What would make a group buy into that versus buy into what I agree with you, where the results are?
Well, I think one reason it doesn't work is because the agenda of a politician is not necessarily going to align perfectly with the agenda of a racial or ethnic group that's struggling economically. So, for example, Obama gets into office, and you take an issue like education, school choice, very popular in the Black community, particularly the low-income Black community. But Obama gets in office and immediately tries to shut down a school voucher program in D.C. and another one in Louisiana. And the reason is not because these programs aren't popular with Blacks or that they don't work. It's that he's now a politician, and he has to reward the special interest groups that helped elect him, namely the teachers union.
Well, I'm in agreement with that, but here's what I'm asking, though. Yeah. Why is it Republicans are deficient? Because I want to pivot toward Trump and the breakthrough with this, Jason. In that, I agree with you about school choice, but it has not been an issue to get their foot in the door that's resulted in saying, we're here, we see these problems, we're not ignoring them, this is a path. We're on the side of all Americans. For some reason, even though I see the same polling you do, particularly with Hispanic parents, that has not broken through. They still are not demanding that Democrats do this or Republicans be allowed to do it.
No, I think that you have, when it comes to how Blacks vote, they're not voting on education issues. Mm-hmm. I think the Democrats have done a very good job of, you know, basically presenting government as a solution to the problems that Black Americans face, and the more government, the better, the bigger government, the better. And there's also the problem of Republicans not doing very much outreach to Black Americans. So there are a number of reasons why Blacks vote the way they do. What I'm getting at in False Black Power is the strategy that the political leadership, the Black political leadership, has been stressing since the 1960s, which is that if we just elect more Black officials, Black economic prosperity will follow. And that, too, has been successful, as it was with the Irish. You've had Black Americans running huge cities with large Black populations over the years. You know, the number of Black elected officials grew from fewer than 1,500 in 1970 to more than 10,000 by 2010. So, and we're talking about Blacks running, you know, Washington, D.C.,
sure,
Philadelphia, Cleveland, Atlanta, Baltimore, Los Angeles, huge cities. But the black core has stayed that way, while all of this black political clout has been attained. So my argument is that it just does not follow that simply electing more black officials will lead to more black economic prosperity.
It seems to almost negate it because it's gone down the wrong path. So President Trump has not been on this agenda. He's been tied up with some other things. But during the campaign, what I liked, he brought fresh eyes to this. I remember John McCain tried it a little bit of outreach and then just gave up, said it's hopeless and all this. Trump, in his own strange way, was doing more of that. And some of the things he said seemed to break through, that people were willing to listen. Do you sense that? And what should he do to break through?
Well, I don't think that the black vote was something that Trump thought he needed in order to win. So I don't think it was a big focus of his campaign. I think that going forward, he needs to do, or he should do, or what I would like to see him do, is to engage more and to go around the traditional civil rights leadership in order to do that. Go into black communities and introduce himself to these people. That's what I'd like to see him do. You know, what was interesting about Trump is that his television show, Celebrity Apprentice, was very popular in black America, extremely popular. And I thought that was something that would give him something of an entree with these voters. But he didn't, again, I don't think it was a big part of his campaign to do black outreach, so we didn't see much of it going on. But I'd like to see him do more. I don't think that blacks have written him off. I think when he talks about issues like crime and drugs and so forth, he has an opening. I think black Americans will listen to him, but I think he's got to do a better job of engaging them.
Now, let's talk about other parts of this book. Black Lives Matter really now has the Democrat Party, I think, afraid of them. I don't think their numbers are huge. What do you think about the movement? Does that, they say they are empowering. They want to take over the community, police out, that kind of thing. Are they an empowering in their own way element outside the political system?
I don't think so. I don't mind a group that's going to focus on police abuse, police brutality, but to make that the central narrative and to suggest that the problems in these black communities primarily have to do with policing, I think is quite laughable, frankly. And I this whole idea that that our jails and prisons are teeming with young black men because cops are shooting them, or the cops are kicking them. I don't think the average black person buys that. I think this is primarily a political organization, and I don't think they're doing the poor blacks any favors by stressing policing. I think what these communities need is good policing, because you know, the criminals in these communities primarily prey on poor blacks, and so to the extent that we get less effective policing in low-income communities, the people who live in these communities are going to be worse off. So I think a lot of what this group has been focused on is counterproductive, and it's clearly a false narrative. I mean, the whole idea that we'd have a movement in 2017 focused on police excessive force is somewhat laughable if you look at the data on police shooting. And I can give you a good example of a police department that kept quite detailed records since the early 1970s, which is the nation's largest police department, New York City. So back in 1971, you had more than 300 police shootings in New York, with around more than 90 deaths. You fast forward to 2015, we're down to 26 police shootings and 8 deaths. So that's a more than 90% reduction in police shootings and police fatalities over the past 4.5 decades. And you have a group like Black Lives Matter out there suggesting that there's some epidemic of cops going around targeting young black men. It just doesn't stand up to scrutiny. So I don't think that pushing this false narrative is really doing the black core any favors.
Absolutely. The book, False Black Power. I admire your work. You're writing at the Wall Street Journal when I see you on TV. Good luck with the book. And I agree with you. This is where the action is. And until that's bought into, it's going to be pretty hard when you have the president of the United States, after all, how much more do you need if that's the way to move the ball forward?
Yeah, yes, yes.
Thank you, Jason. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Tom Giordano, weekdays 9 till noon on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.